This week, we're revisiting a podcast with Lee Broom, one of the most exciting product designers of his generation and a global design brand.
You get an emotional connection to design in the same way that you will with art or a theatrical performance. I don't see why we can't have those same sort of emotions when we're looking at a chair or a lamp or, you know, whatever it might be.
Welcome to House Guest with me, Carol Annett, interiors editor at Country and Townhouse magazine. Here I chat to those clever creatives behind the houses, hotels and brands you see in glossy magazines like ours. Guests including interior designers and architects, as well as celebrities dipping their toe into the world of decorating. My house guest today is celebrated British furniture and lighting designer Lee Broom, whose work is recognised and retailed around the world. Lee has won the Queen's Award for Enterprise. He's collaborated with Christian Louboutin, Mulberry, Bergdorf Goodman, Wedgwood. Lee, you have a studio in London and in New York. I almost feel that there should be a sort of a drum roll here because I've been wanting to chat to you for so long. And actually, I'm also slightly embarrassed because our paths have never crossed and I've heard so much about you. So it's a real honour to meet you finally. And thank you very, very much for being a house guest.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So I wanted to talk about all sorts of things in your career, but what fascinates me is that I get the feeling you didn't intend to be a furniture and lighting designer. I mean, you were part of the Royal Shakespeare Company at one point, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't laugh. I mean, it's perfectly wonderful. So give us a little bit of your background about how you got to where you are.
Yeah, well, you are right. I was a member of the Royal Shakespeare Company, and I was a member from the age of 9 till I was 16. But I was basically a child actor. So I went to theatre school from the age of 7. And, you know, being a boy in an environment that's sort of dominated by girls, you know, if you're talented, you do really, really well. So I was doing a lot of work in theatre, TV and voiceovers, and then became a member of the Royal Shakespeare Company. And so it wasn't a hobby, it was a career, and one that I was going to continue into my adulthood. So yeah, I did have an unusual route into where I am now. I've had a few twists and turns.
And then did you win a competition to work with Vivienne Westwood, or how did that come about?
Yeah, so if you remember the clothes show back in the late 80s.
I remember it well.
Yes, I had a real interest in fashion and I was very good at drawing. My dad was an artist and he taught me how to draw. So I loved drawing architecture and then I really got into fashion, probably when I was about 17. And although I was still acting at the time and that was absolutely going to be my chosen career as an adult, I decided to enter this Young Designer of the Year award, which was in association with the clothes show. And one of the judges on the panel was Vivienne Westwood. And I won the competition for my age group. And after the sort of fashion show awards ceremony thing that we did, I approached Vivienne with an autograph book and she wrote her phone number down and said to me, if you're interested in fashion, why don't you come to the studio and see how things work? So I ended up actually going to her studio for 2 days. And it wasn't just with the team, it was with her in her office. And I was party to all of the meetings that she was having with design assistants and accessory designers. And then when it was just me and her, she would show me little things that she was working on, kind of like sort of patterns that she was doing, and talk to me about how the history of art really influences her work and her pattern cutting, and how you can create things that are inspired by techniques from the past to make contemporary products. So it was just an overwhelming experience for somebody who was, you know, in their formative years, but was also such a huge fan of Vivienne as well. After the 2 days was up, I showed her my portfolio of outfits that I'd been sketching at home. And she said to me, if you want to stay here and work as an intern, you can stay here for as long as you like and we'll try and take you to Paris. And that was it. I ended up staying there for around 10 months and I worked on 2 shows in Paris as well.
Wow. What a lovely, generous thing of her, you know, for her to do. You know, she obviously saw a young talent. You know, that's really lovely. And so from there, how did you move into what you're doing now?
Well, I then decided that I didn't want to pursue acting anymore. I wanted to move into fashion design. And to do that, I thought I'd have to go to Central St. Martin's because that seemed like the best school in the whole of London. It was actually really against the advice of Vivian, however, because she was like, oh, you shouldn't go to fashion school. You should do your own thing. You don't need to do that. You'll be homogenized. You'll be put in a box. You know, you won't be creative enough. And I didn't end up taking her advice because I thought that at that point, going to fashion school was the way that it had to be done. And I'm glad I did. And I learned so much at St. Martin's. But it's interesting that I ended up being in a profession that I wasn't formally trained in. So in a roundabout way, I sort of did end up taking her advice. And she was right in that respect.
Yeah. You've got this beautiful new book out called Fashioning Design by Rizzoli. And what I loved, Stephen Jones has written in the intro, and he says, I could see he was searching for the right medium for his self-expression. How lucky we are that he found his métier and our interiors illuminated by his lighting, our posteriors cosseted by his furniture. I think that's such a charming sort of accolade from somebody who has done great things in his own field in millinery, and then to come to be generous to you and say, you know, wow, what an extraordinary, you know, he says they're like art pieces we can use. Can you remember the first thing that you designed that became commercially popular that you were able to sell?
Yeah, I think probably I'd already done, I think, two collections, because I started Lee Broom in 2007 after having a few years as an interior designer with my own business. And because at that point I decided to move into interiors, which is kind of like another story. I've had lots of transitions in my life, but essentially the main thing was, is that I wanted to have my own brand and do my own thing. So whether it was fashion or interiors or product design, to a certain extent, it didn't matter. But after I launched the brand in 2007, I had a couple of collections that were very successful from a press point of view and were sort of art design pieces that were sort of had neon lighting around them. So I knew that I was really interested in working with light in kind of like an art piece environment. But it was really, I think, my crystal bulb, which became the big hit. And the thing with that product was, is that it basically, for anybody that hasn't seen it, it's sort of like an industrial light bulb combined with cut glass crystal. So it's sort of, you have this sort of thing that reminds you of your grandparents and these decanters. And then you also have this very common object that we've all seen throughout our entire lives. And it sort of like hit the zeitgeist in some way. And it also used LED technology, which was quite new at that point, but was also very classic. And up to that point, I'd been doing very expensive limited edition pieces. And this was an item that people could really just buy. It was more accessible, but probably the most expensive light bulb you're ever going to buy. But it still had the qualities of my other products. So it was still handcrafted. It was still hand-blown. And it just really took off, I guess. And that's what made me more well-known in the sort of the public arena and not just in the sort of like design arena.
And do you think that there has to be a sense of drama in everything that you do? Is that part of, you think, what good design is about?
I don't think there has to be a sense of drama for it to be good. I don't know. I mean, I think there has to be perhaps more a sense of escapism, perhaps more so than drama. I think certainly when you're creating products at this level, which is more the sort of luxury, aspirational level, where people really do want to have statement pieces or conversational pieces, pieces that have a point of difference, there is a certain idea of like a sort of escapism with that, having something that's uniquely yours, things that other people don't have or they haven't seen it in that way. I think that's what I like. And then at the same time, definitely there is drama in my work, certainly in my exhibitions and presentations, some of which are real theatrical performances actually. And I like that aspect of it because it really brings design to life and you get an emotional connection to design in the same way that you will with art or a theatrical performance. I don't see why we can't have those same sort of emotions when we're looking at a chair or a lamp or, you know, whatever it might be.
I feel like there's a very Britishness about what you do, but also a humour. I love your, what you call the drunken table, your side table, which doesn't look like it ought to be able to stand on its own, and yet it does.
Yeah, it's I got that from working with loads of sort of builders on interiors projects, and they would always refer to something when it's not straight as being a little bit pissed, and I always used to find that it was a really amusing way of describing something, and it's very, very British, you're right. So, but I wasn't going to call it the pissed up table. I thought it would be more appropriate to call it the drunken table, it's completely out of balance. But I like those sort of British sort of phrases and things, you know, and particularly when I'm naming the pieces.
And what are you working on at the moment? I mean, you're kindly talking to us from New York. So you have a showroom in Rivington Street in East London here. And then whereabouts in New York is your showroom?
In Tribeca, which is downtown Manhattan.
So, and how often are you flitting backwards and forwards?
Fairly regularly now that we can. I mean, we've had a presence in New York since 2016. I love New York. I think it's an amazing city. And I think if you love London, you will always love New York as well. They're sort of very similar in some ways, but also very different. Mm. And we do very well in the States. Our products do very well here. So it's an important place for us to be present and have a real presence here. We did originally have a showroom in Soho, and then I decided that I wanted to do something a lot more personal and something that was more private and exclusive for people. So I decided that our next showroom would be a penthouse apartment where all of our products have been really put in the space and interior designed, which I hadn't actually done before. You know, I've had our products in a fictitious church or in a department store, or, you know, kind of created our products in the back of a van that we took around Milan, like a palazzo, actually sort of presenting my work in a residential environment I hadn't done. So it's very nice. Our clients can get to come here, see the pieces, and I also get to stay here when I'm in town. So it has a double benefit.
So what about commercial spaces? Have you done any hotels or bars or anything?
I mean, we work a lot with hotels, but yes, we have designed quite a few bars. I mean, I mentioned before I had an interiors company before Lee Broom, and our speciality, myself and my partner at the time, was bar and restaurant design. So we did about 30 bars and restaurants while we had the company in the UK. It was kind of like a training ground for me to start this business, if you like. And it's a good one because, you know, when you're designing a space that is going to be filled with people, all drinking, kind of getting quite raucous, everything has to be super durable. You know, you talked about the drunken side table. This really is the drunken side table, you know, in a venue. It has to really, really last. So, like, I really learned about the durability and lots of restrictions that you've got to work around as a designer. And, of course, designers thrive off restrictions. So it put me in good stead for what I did next, I think.
And what's kind of exciting you at the moment? What's getting your juices flowing? Is there a particular medium that you're working with? Is it, you know, is it still kind of crystal, still do your thing? Or glass blowing? What is it that excites you at the moment?
Well, I mean, I love experimenting with new things and new materials, you know, and I don't like to do the same thing twice if I can help it, even if it's selling really well. I don't think that's my place in the world to be doing that. I should be doing everything that I can or want to as a designer and an artist. But for the last collection that I did in Milan, one of the ranges, I actually made the pieces myself. And they're made with sort of draping these sort of plaster forms, which almost look like sort of draped fabric, but it's actually solid plaster that sort of capture these light forms like a globe or a tube or a ring. And I've never actually made a piece physically myself, unless it's been like prototyping or model making, which we do a lot, but not the actual finished product for a client. And I thought after 15 years, I think it would be really nice to actually do something that my hands have touched. And when somebody buys that piece, you know, they'll know that I've been absolutely involved with it from beginning to end. So I'm quite interested in doing a little bit more of that, but it does take quite a lot of time, and everybody wants me to do other things, you know, because it's a bit time consuming. But I really enjoy that aspect of like getting my hands dirty and just working in new materials. So yeah.
And are you still in touch with Vivian? Does she keep tabs on you?
Yeah, I actually saw her about 3 years ago at an event, and we had a really lovely chat, and I hadn't seen her for quite a long time up till that point. And then was very lucky that she contributed towards the book as well. She gave a quote for the book, which was very nice.
So can I ask you what you're most proud of?
That's a good question, actually. I mean, there's a few things. I think in general, the ability to have been able to sort of have a career that I could also make a good living out of as well. I think it sounds really simplistic, but I think it's kind of what everybody wants at the end of the day, to be able to do well out of what they love doing. I think that's the sort of basis. And I don't take any of it for granted whatsoever. I do often pinch myself and think, I'm really lucky that I can even make any of these decisions myself and create these things. And, you know, for me, it's about, you know, having something in my head and then manifesting it in reality for other people to enjoy it and myself. And I think that's always been the key thing for me. And obviously there have been really amazing moments along the way. And you mentioned earlier on, we got the Queen's Award for Enterprise in 2015 and got invited to Buckingham Palace to meet Her Majesty the Queen and other members of the royal family and have drinks there. And, you know, it's the highest accolade that you can get as a business in the UK. And it was for our international growth, which was not design related at all. So, you know, a really kind of special one on all accounts. And obviously to meet her as well was incredible.
Can you remember what you wore?
I wore a Burberry suit, kept it British.
Rock on. you've talked about all sorts of different transitions in your life. What's the next Lee Broom transition? What are we going to see?
I don't know if there'll be any major transitions at this point. I think I've really sort of found my niche and I'm happy with that. I think there'll be an evolvement of what I do in this area. I am definitely looking at sort of getting into some more art pieces as well as the kind of general pieces that we do under the brand. And there are still hundreds of things that I would really love to design that I haven't done yet that are kind of, you know, unrelated to lighting and furniture. You know, I feel like I've only just scratched the surface, really. You know, even though it's been sort of 15 years of the brand, I feel like it's just started. And in a way, that's kind of a nice moment to release the book. It feels like that chapter's closed and now the next one's going to begin.
Well, the FT called you among the most respected British talents, which is also a pretty high accolade. So, Lee, thank you so much. Congratulations on all you've achieved. And I will follow with interest the next chapter.
But thank you so much for having me. It's been really nice to talk to you.
And the book is out now.
The book comes out on the 15th of November.
Perfect Christmas present.
Exactly. Perfect timing. Yeah.
Thank you for joining me today. You can hear more House Guest on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment in the audio section, along with our sister podcast, Breakout Culture, with Lord Edvasey and Charlotte Metcalfe. This week, Charlotte Metcalfe talks to actors Dave Johns and Davey Nellist about the new stage adaptation of Ken Loach's I, Daniel Blake, which is currently touring the UK. You can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett.